have a little bit of difficulty
Blog
with my
Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our Global Languages Classroom. We are Joy, Gladys, and Virmare for the course of Curriculum Constructs and Assessments for Global Languages in University of Phoenix Online. This episode is fulfilling the requirement for our last theme project, Parent, Teacher, and Community Collaboration. We extend our most profound appreciation to our facilitator, Dr. Kreider, for all that we have learned in class and for providing a significant spectrum of online learning experiences. Gladys, I'm sorry I didn't keep talking to you because this was about to start. How are you?
Good. Thank you for inviting me to this nice online side. Hello, everybody, and welcome, World Languages Teachers. My name is Gladys Kraus. I teach Spanish to grades 9 and 10, levels 1 and 2, in a private school in Naples, Florida. I am finishing my second year as a Spanish teacher with a huge toolbox of strategies that I have learned in the last few months since I'm getting involved in these courses. And I'm getting ready for the new school year.
That's so exciting. Thank you so much. Joy is still not here, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself. I am Vimare Santiago, and I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I have been teaching Spanish for the last 21 years now. I started being a teacher in Puerto Rico to native speakers, and 14 years ago I decided to come here to the United States. So this is going to be my 14 years. It's been 14 years since I started teaching non-speakers and Spanish speakers. I'm going to go ahead, Gladys, since you are the first one that that is going to share with us part of the information that we have today here for the teachers. I'm going to go ahead and start and see if Joy can join us later on. Is that okay?
Okay. Good for me. Okay.
Let's do this. Resources for the new teacher in the Global Languages Classroom is focused today on parent, teacher, and community collaboration. Gladys, I will please ask you to guide us and the new teacher about what are some of the strategies for using community resources. And if you please would like to share any personal experiences after that, please do so. Is that okay?
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The strategies for using community resources in the global language classroom are huge. In this PowerPoint that we're showing to the new teachers, I just have mentioned some of those. And I think our community, out of school, we can find lots of resources. For
mm-hmm.
example, just the partners, as we have a partnership venture with businesses, industry, non-school community, agencies, and the home, those are very good partners that we can work with to make our classroom, global language classroom, enhance. So I'm just including, for example, the new teacher can find, identify the talent in the community. Some talent could be, for example, some artists, dancers, or entrepreneurs that are related to the target language, so they can be get in contact with the classroom. Maybe we can invite them and ask them to talk to the students and you know the, and show them all the benefits to have a, another language with you. Also, I'm now including or highlighting that visit to enterprises or organizations related to the target language, like radio stations, magazines, or television channels, if they are available in the community. Those are good places to go visit and make the students get in contact with the people and know how they work, how they use the language, the target language. Let's see. Maybe work in that.
Glad to you hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Is Joy there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Joy.
Nice meeting you finally.
Hi. Sorry, I keep trying to call in and something happened. Sorry, I'm a few minutes late.
Do not worry because Gladys was the first to start, so it's been okay. There is no problem. So Gladys, were those the let me check our presentation. Did you finish mentioning the community resources that you wanted to share with us?
Yes. The new teachers can find this information in our PowerPoint that I included in this podcast. And I was trying to spend a little bit of each of those strategies. And well, to share some of my experience, I can say that I actually I'm gonna try to invite a group of dancers of salsa music, for example, and they could make a presentation in our classroom, and I think the students are gonna love that, and they're gonna be in contact with the culture and with the language.
Okay.
Definitely, I can imagine that. Joy, would you like to share any personal experiences in terms of the information that Gladys just shared with us? We were just talking about the using community resources in the global language classroom. If you have any personal experiences that you would like to add or any comments on that, please go ahead and do so.
Okay. First of all, you want me to start with the information that I share on the PowerPoint about the parent-teacher community collaboration?
Oh, no, that can wait. I just wanted to give you a chance if you wanted to share anything about the first resources that Gladys just shared with us. You were supposed to go right after these.
Okay. Let me see.
She was just talking about the resources that you can get from the community. Like you can ask the student or plan visits to radio stations, magazines, or television channels and stuff like that. So you can go and access those resources and bring them to the classroom. Do you have any personal experiences on that, or you want to go ahead and start with your section?
Let me go on my section, and I'll get back to you, okay?
Okay, no problem. So here's Joy. Joy is going to be sharing with us resources available at school and off-campus in areas such as social, health, educational, and language-related services. Joy is going to start now with social and health resources. Go ahead, Joy.
Okay, so I gathered all this information about resources available at school or off campus, and I'd like to start with the social and health resources. So for on campus, every school should have the student counselor for any social or health support and or any kind of issue that encounter at school, not just about language learning, but just anything related to school. And also on campus, many schools have extra help time with the teacher. Like personally, I have that every Tuesday, Wednesday morning. So for anybody who needs a little extra instructional help, they can come see me in the morning. And we also have after-school tutoring available. And I think public school system had different kind of support and resources. For example, my school, as a private school, we have Learning Network on campus for extra studying strategies or any kind of learning disability-related issues, so you can get help on campus. And we also have a few options for after-school club that's related to language learning. For example, our school has Spanish newspaper club. That's really, really popular. A lot of students, not just for Spanish language learner, we have a lot of heritage speakers. They love joining that club. And we have an upper school, we have Asian club. And I think also a day of multicultural assembly is also a great way to promote multicultural awareness for students and faculty. And if you extend the language learning to a home situation, I think there's a lot of family trips could be arranged to provide authentic exposures. And we can also have cable TV subscription with Spanish or Chinese, so kids can have more exposure to the language. And I think a lot of families love going to stores or Spanish or Chinese restaurants just to get that feeling of realistic setting. And also for Chinese language learning, Chinese New Year celebration is always very, very popular, and to get more cultural exposure. And or for Spanish, that's Cinco de Mayo. Okay. And that's it for our social health services. And any comments?
Gladys, I'm going to give you a chance to talk now. It's just that I would like to share that I was surprised that you guys have all those resources in your school. I really liked the idea of the, let me see, I was reading here, that extra help time in the mornings on campus. Of course, I do also do that in my school. I do it also after school. It's not an official tutoring program that we have, but I always make myself available for either in the morning or after school. Mm-hmm. And I like the Multicultural Global Citizenship Club that you mentioned and the Spanish newspaper, because even when 97% of the student body in my school has Hispanic background, we don't have a Spanish publication at all. So I found that you guys, you know, deserve a lot of admiration for that, because we are 90% Hispanic population or background with Hispanic background, and we don't have it. So I congratulate you on that, and I'm glad that they have those resources there. Gladys, would you like to add something to that?
Yes, I just want to express my, well, I am amazed, and I'm so surprised, and I'm glad to hear and to know the huge opportunities that Joy has mentioned in her work to show to the new teachers, that every teacher, every language teacher can have that opportunity, and they can find resources and ways to make the language classroom perform with the best high level. Like for example, the media centers in the schools, for example, they have technology on hand for the students to use it, and also the newspapers. The newspapers in any language, I think that teachers can have that chance and tool to give to the students more options to develop their skills.
That's definitely a big advantage. Joy, before we continue with you and the educational resources, would you please introduce yourself so the new teacher and people that might be listening to us know who you are and what you do at the present time, please?
Okay, yes. My name is Joy Strampak. I'm from Taiwan originally. My first language is Chinese. Second language is English, and I've been a language teacher for the last 8 years. I work at a private school in Fort Lauderdale, and teaching Mandarin, it's my passion. I love being the classroom teacher, and I've been at the same school the last 8 years. I developed a program starting with very, very few students. I think the first year we only have maybe 20 people or even 18 people taking Chinese in middle school. And the next year become 40 and then 60, 80. And then this year we have more than 180 students taking Mandarin. It's almost half of the population of the Spanish is equal to Spanish language learners. So that's it. That's my background.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting, Joy, Ben, that you could be leading something like that. I can imagine what I cannot have the excitement. Because if I know what you're talking about, I think I know what you're talking about, because when you have a first language and you come to a different country to teach that language and see how the demand of, getting to learn that language is growing, it must be so exciting. So
yeah.
I really
congratulate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think because we live in South Florida, so and I think a lot of students already know how to speak Spanish in my school. So I think giving them an option to learn Chinese is really useful for the future. A lot of kids that encountered the last 8 years, they already even either speak Spanish fluently or have really, really great exposure. So I think learning Chinese is a great opportunity for them.
True, definitely. See, Gladys, go ahead.
I just want to say that it's fantastic what I'm listening mm-hmm. and Joy, that big job that she's enormous and fantastic job that she's making. And I think it's because of her skills. And also because she demonstrated that by having the good tools and also that knowledge, you can do a lot of things with in your career.
Yeah, definitely.
Certainly. It is really positive that, as you said, Joy, most of the students here might know already Spanish. So just the fact that they are interested in learning something else and what a big opportunity it is for anyone that is bilingual to go out there after school in terms of the career, then in college, and then after college, the opportunities that they are learning in their lives are huge, definitely. Joy, would you like to mm-hmm. go ahead and mention the 10 educational resources that you have there with you and briefly highlight what they offer if you would like so? And if you have anything to expand about with Gladys after Joy's finished, you can go ahead and do so.
Okay. So I was researching on the educational resources in Florida. So I picked the interesting one to share with you and the most useful one. The first one, I think the most important, is to get familiar with Florida Department of Education. And on their website, they have many information for different school districts, universities, and educators to understand the state standards and the requirements. So I think it's very important to get familiar with that organization. Second one, for language teachers, the Florida Foreign Language Association, it's a nonprofit organization for all of our language teachers, and they have annual conference in Florida, and I have attended before, and I'm going to this year in October, and it has lots of information that the teachers are sharing, so that's also very useful. Now, another one is, for me as a Chinese teacher, there's a Florida Chinese Teacher Association, and that has grown really big over the last 5 years. And for example, this year I took students to the Florida All-State Chinese competition. So this organization, they host the event every year. This is the 10th year anniversary, and they really draw a lot of Chinese language students. Okay, and let's see what else. And I also can talk about some language resources here in Florida. And the first one, I think the biggest one, is at University of Florida Department of Languages, Literatures, and Cultures. So a lot of our high school graduate, when they move on to U.S., they can continue their language study, even go further than that, and study literatures and social studies or economies in different countries. And we also have Florida State Spanish Conference. I think a lot of Spanish learning students really interested in that, in competition in different category. It's an academic competition for high school students in Florida. Mm-hmm. And two more, University of South Florida Confucius Institute. It's Confucius is the Chinese philosopher. This institute really promotes Chinese language learning and culture. So a lot of my students are involved with that, especially when they move on to college. And I want to mention one more. It's very important for us. It's the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. And it really provides us a lot of guidelines and about our industry, and just try to be bring more innovation, quality to foreign language teaching. So I constantly check on that site too. Last one I want to talk about, it's kind of local to me. It's Florida Atlantic University in Boca. It's only half an hour away from me. They have a world language department. It offers many languages studies, such as French, Italian, Arabic, German, Chinese, Hebrew, Japanese, Latin. And they have a very exclusive department for world language. So do you guys have any comments?
Gladys, would you like to make any comments about that?
Just to say that I think that the global language teachers can find lots of language resources to improve their teaching practice and benefit their students. The American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages is one of them, just to mention one of those many that Joy just have talked about. And it depends on each teacher. I think it depends on us as teachers to get a better performance and to get all the knowledge, all the skills, all the strategies that we can acquire from different areas, and just put it all together and then give it to the students that will discover all what they need.
Definitely. I need to be really honest with you guys. I have become aware of a lot of things that I didn't know about just because of the course that we are taking. So once again, since I am in the same way that I said it at the beginning,
I'm really appreciative of what Dr. Kreider has made us, you know, discover, because for me, many of these institutions, I really didn't know about them, or really didn't know about the amount of resources that a global language teacher has in the classroom. So I'm really excited about the idea that now that I know, there are many other points of view, there are many other ways of approaching things in the classroom. So thank you so much to the two of you, you know, for making us aware of those resources. I would like to go ahead then now and start with my first contribution, which has to do with how family and personal experience influences teaching and learning in the global language classroom. I would like to start with a short reflection about the role of family and this one. I really think that a strong inventory of core values is the key for success in all learning experience. The structure that par excellence fosters those is family, in my opinion. Family is the number one promoter and ideal complement on which the teaching-learning exchanges that happen in the classroom are built on. A family that supports genuine learning is preparing individuals that value new experiences, that easily embrace different environments, and that are not reticent of transforming them with its own intent. A learner with such core values will be a learner for life. It all can start as a suggestion in terms of how family can start collaborating with, you know, what is happening in the classroom or what will happen in the classroom. It can start with something really simple and as natural as possible as just having, you know, having parent-child reading of target language books, which is something that has proved to be a significantly effective strategy that supports interest and healthy relationships with the second language acquisition. I think that also family can help with meaningful supervised content of TV programming or something that is more common today, direct digital interaction on tablets involving the target language. Those are some other ways that, you know, will support this early partnering, in my opinion. Then I would like to go with the personal notes in terms of how it is that personal experiences, for example, my personal experiences have affected positively my teaching in the classroom. I didn't grow up watching English TV programming, but I have listened to a lot of music in English as far as I can remember. I grew up in Puerto Rico listening to Barry Manilow, Bonnie Tyler, Rod Stewart, the Bee Gees, and to bands like Journey or Air Supply, who, the, you know, they are very well known, just to name a few. And then when I became a mom that could afford cable TV at home, I remember, like today, my son was exposed to it, but not with any special intentions whatsoever. One day, I remember that all of a sudden, he yelled at me from his bed, "What's up?" And it wasn't until then that I was realizing, or that I realized what I had been doing with having the cable TV, having him exposed to the TV programming in cable. So a couple of years later, we ended up coming to the United States in search of a new life and opportunities, even when Puerto Rico is a territory for us was a huge change to assume. And he was already 5, and took him only 2 months to be speaking to me in English with far acceptable fluency for that age, given that English was not his first language and that I was not speaking meaningful English to him at home. I would like parents and new teachers to know that I never worried about having to do so because we were a different generation that, for example, my mom, when she came for a while in the 60s, I also knew as a language teacher that I was already that the school was going to take care of it. what was really important for me and what I'm suggesting parents and teachers in a personal level to do is that my concern was more about the fact of fostering a home atmosphere of openness and of respect for diversity to embrace the new life that we have in front of us. So I was able to do so because not only I did, well, of course, I believed in that because I saw it in my home. My parents back then when I was growing up, none of them finished a career in college, but the two of them always gave me an atmosphere of openness to the American culture and to English in some way. So when I came here, it was easier for me to adapt. I would like to also share, let me see, I lost my slide. Give me a second. Okay. And, So that's what I'm encouraging parents and teachers to do. And as a teacher, finally, when I finally was here working, naturally, it was kind of shocking the way that I saw that I had to teach the language because it wasn't anymore teaching to native speakers, of course. And so I had to reprogram my mind for non-speakers, which made it a little bit harder. And nonetheless, it has been 14 years now since that first time, and the experience couldn't have been more enriching and satisfying. Would you like, guys, to share anything in terms of your personal experience, in terms of how family and personal experiences affect or have affected your teaching? Joy, would you like to share something? And if not, Gladys, you can go ahead and talk to us.
I would like to share briefly about my experience because I think it's a lot different from yours. I actually I stayed in Taiwan until I finished college. I didn't come to America till I was 22. I went to Ohio State University for master degree. So I actually really didn't have much exposure in America at all. My first experience was learning English in middle school in Taiwan. And fortunately, my family is really supportive of learning English and getting exposure. So I love watching movies, listening to music. So, and later on in high school, I have a few opportunities to have vacation in California to visit friends. So I think over time, I have exposure little by little, not a lot. And until when I was 21, turning 22, that's when I moved to America, and I really have feel like I'm completely fluent in English. So it was a really long journey, and I was studying language teaching, so I knew I'm going to be a language teacher later on in life. And I think my family played a big role on this because they were really extremely supportive, and I think that all goes to affected filter, right? Because it's a positive home experience, really encouraging me to learn English, a second language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anything else you guys want to add? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead and share anything you need to share.
Thinking about my experiences very shortly also. I think that a good age to start learning languages is when you are a teenager, probably. It's like it happened to me also when I was at school. As you, Birma, just reminded me of my childhood. I used to listen to music. I think that's when I started to like, for example, English. I love the languages. So, and then I had the opportunity. Given my father, no, to put me in a school, no, to learn a little bit more of English, but I never used it because I think you have to be immersed in the language, no, with the people who speak the language, and that just happened 10 years ago when I came to the United States and started using it, and it was a little hard for me at the beginning, but then little by little, I could master the language and learn a little bit more, have a little bit more fluency.
That's fascinating. For me, it is something that deserves so much respect, how every personal experience and family is shaping the way that we teach and the way that we learn, definitely, because we haven't stopped learning either, even when we're already teaching. So that's what I about structure. So I would like to go ahead and start with the second contribution that I have to do with for the project, which is the importance of communication and collaboration between teacher and parent. I would love all of you to go from this premise. If family is fostering the core values for successful learning experience, collaborating with parents is always the road to take. This collaboration can be achieved harmoniously in the best interest of all parts involved. We could start with just simply assuming that we are all learning when coming together as family and educational institutions that we are. And we should remember that there is a constant exchange of feedback about who we are and our roles and responsibilities. Amidst it all, we as teachers are shaping human beings, parents included, and at the same time, they are shaping us. I think that's a very healthy point of view to keep in mind every time that we get in contact with our students and parents. Also, when we bid at the efficacy of our relationships and as learners and with learners, nothing can go wrong. There is a great variety of training about how to communicate effectively to parents, but before we go and consider that, I would like to reflect on the fact that all of it is set for comfort and for failure if we go or when the approach is one of assuming disadvantage about any of the parts involved, which usually is about the learner. My point really is, in very simple words, whenever we have in mind that family is the road to take, is the best collaboration that we can ask for, we cannot get to ask family to be involved if we are looking at any of the parts, normally with the student, and see it from a disadvantaged point of view. We need to consider that all of us, teachers, parents, and students, are going from the same level of advantage, and that would make it even more easier. I can tell you that no student is ever in a place of disadvantage. In my opinion, individuals will adjust in one way or another to any circumstances. So capitalizing on every single strength they have will always bring the best of all of us into the mix. Assessing which one are those strengths before you meet with the parents of that student, will trace the road to follow, which ultimately is the only way we have of collaborating. So in that way, even without very effortlessly, if we have that set of mind before contacting family or asking them for collaboration, the student will open in a very different way to the entire process of learning and of acceptance of a new learning a new language and so on. So, guys, I'm gonna go ahead and share very quickly which ones are these types of communication that we have here, and then I will ask you to share which one is your favorite one, and then move on. Is that okay? So the first one, the communication basically can be attained in two ways, that impressions created and words expressed. The impressions are created by school, classroom signs, environment, body language, etc. And the expressed words is the type of interaction used in one-way or two-way communication.
When you talk about one-way communication, you need to keep in mind that it requires careful consideration about the format and the content, and that the goal is to organize concise, accurate, informative, accurate information for easy reading and understanding. Some examples of one-way communication are newsletters, school-to-home notebooks, report cards. And then the two-way communication are those like the phone call, the phone call home, and the parent-teacher conferences. Communication also can be done through technology, as it is very common currently. Some examples of that type of communication are classroom phones and voicemail. Video technology, radio announcements, and school websites. So, Joy, would you like to share with us which one would you prefer?
Yeah, sure. I think in my classroom with the parents, the most effective way to communicate, first one is email. And I think my school always encourages all the teachers to email the parents back promptly so they can get a reply in a timely fashion. So that's mm-hmm. one way. And also our school has the school website. It's the e-learning website, and that's where teachers all post all the due day information about assignments and the class schedule and then any kind of course information, even class activities. So the parents can get really up-to-date information. And I'm pretty sure 90% of the parents really check that and use that all the time, because instead of email teacher about a question, the fastest way is actually check on the school website to see what's going on. And if they have question about assignment or a test, a quiz date or test date, and that's where you can get the most accurate information. So that's also very useful for communicating with parents. And I think the third one, I like our parent-teacher conference. We have it 3 times a year, and I think it's very, very effective, because the parents who actually come and have an issue, and we can almost always resolve the problem right on the spot, because I think nothing can replace the face-to-face communication. And that's definitely needed. Not all the time, but I think a few times a year really work for the students' learning process. And I think the last one is my personal thing that I practice in my class, is I have a Twitter account for Chinese language learning. So this it's called Miss Joy's Chinese Class. It's on Twitter. And every day I will follow some news in China, educational news or tips for learning language, and just sometimes just even just fun things that's happening in China. So I try to have most of my parents follow me on Twitter if they can. Some of the parents are really they're avid user of Twitter, and that's the another way to communicate. And it's kind of trendy, and it just parents seem to like it. Okay, that's my part.
Awesome. Gladys, go ahead and share anything that you need to share with us.
I think when families take an active interest in what they're learning, what the students are learning, the students display more positive attitudes towards school and behave better in and out of school. And I think it all depends on our communication as teachers. One thing that I want to point out is goals that you described in the PowerPoint in Burma. It says a goal is to organize concise, accurate, formative, and understanding. That's what we have to do. The parents also want to know what the students want and are doing, what are because one, the other day, in one of the parent nights, one of the parents was the grandma. Grandma was in charge of the students at home, and she wanted to know, and what are you trying to do? No, that was her question, but what she wanted to know is, what are your objectives? And I told her, well, what in this quarter, you know, and Jonathan, you know, we want him to be able to breathe and to introduce himself and also others in a short conversation. That is my goal in during this term. So now, because she didn't know anything, no? She doesn't know anything about the language that her grandson is learning, but she wanted to know. And then I told him that he was doing good. Actually, he was doing good, even though, you know, it's hard for a family that is, where the primary language is just English. And so it's hard, but I think he's doing pretty good. And also, I just like to keep family informed of what we are doing in the past.
That's really good. I definitely see how, you know, there are in terms of the technology involved into it lately, there are official ways of the school communicating with the parents, and there are more personal ways in terms of what the teacher is doing. Like, for example, Joy mentioned the Twitter account. I wish I could have a Twitter account like that. We are not allowed to do so. But it's not that I am a really good Twitter person. I'm not a Twitter person. I'm more a Facebook person. And as you know, as you have noticed, our generation of students now, my freshmen and my sophomores, are not Facebook students. They are not Facebook people. But anyways, I have managed to, for example, in my school, they do have, of course, the I like the email way, because we don't have phones in our classroom. So it's better if they email me, and I always make that very clear at the beginning of the year. And then we have at the official website, we have Edline. And I like to add personal notes for students. So every time that they look at the grades, they have a comment if I need to let them know specifically something about the student. We also have a publication that is through email that gets to them through email, which is the Weekly Wire, where, you know, we have all the duties that happen during the week in the school. And of course the parent teacher conferences that happen like four times a year, school year. And then I have the blog, and I have, you know, a blog for the class, and I have not the student account, but I use Google Classroom as well, even when Google Classroom is not something that the parents really access in the way that the students do access that. So really, thank you for sharing all that with us. And Gladys, we can then go ahead and share our last contribution that you have here for us, which is strategies for how to increase parents' involvement. You can go ahead now.
Okay, thank you, Vilma. The last part of our presentation, talking about strategies of how to increase parent involvement. And we know that involving parents in classroom activities sometimes is difficult, but benefit students from little ones to teenagers. And I think that unfortunately for many school districts, true family and community connections remain, you know, as a challenge. But we as teachers, we can try to improve those connections and make the involvement of the parents come true. And some of the strategies that I'm mentioning in this PowerPoint that can help teachers increase parent involvement in a global language classroom are, for example, first of all, we have to understand the factors that contribute to parental involvement in the classroom. To find out what their beliefs are within the class and enrich them. For example, some parents, they have a different point of view of our classroom, and by getting to know them, you know, in any event, we can have some kind of a view of what they think about our classroom. And the next step will be communicate with parents permanently to get them acknowledged of the student's improvement in class, conversations during events, and like for example, open house, the parent night, email, and those strategies can work as effective communication tools. And we can create a variety of opportunities for involving it, because involving can make parents volunteer more. For example, we can set all those events at the beginning of the school year, and it will be helpful to set some good opportunities. The other thing that I have mentioned, like for example, provide some tips to involve parents in their children's testing the target language. And we can ask them to help their children make time to practice, have them teach the parents to say something in the language that they find cultural events connected to language and culture in the study. And also they can search. They can ask the teacher for resources that the children can use at home, provide videos, books, and music in the language, look for opportunities outside the classroom, volunteer to organize a career day that features jobs that use skills in more than one language, for example, and also ask them to be advocate by searching for plans to provide continuous language learning opportunities for students at all grade levels. I think teachers, we have a lot of tasks to do, but little by little and step by step and putting our good efforts, we can do lots of things to make parents involved in our language classroom. And that will be all.
Okay. Thank you so much, Gladys. Joy, do you want to share anything about that topic with us? Any personal experiences or comments about that?
Yeah, just really quick. Okay, I think Gladys did an excellent job on this. She covered almost everything. And I have one little special thing that happened this year. In the beginning of the school year, we had this parents' welcome back night, and then every teacher had to talk about their curriculum. It's a really intimate setting. The parents are listening, what a teacher has to say. And I think that night was really important for me to set the tone for the parents that I want them to get involved, and I want them to participate and try to find opportunities, anything that's Chinese-related during the year that can help their kids learning Chinese. So I think some parents are even suggesting we should have adult Chinese class, maybe just once or twice, and just to show the parents how the kids learn. And lots of parents are interested. So my principal actually suggests me next year we should plan on that. Maybe two nights I can teach the parents Chinese. And some of the parents are doing business in China and or go to New York all the time. They're actually quite interested in that. So that will be the only thing I'm adding to this portion. Okay, thank you.
That's really interesting. And actually, as I keep listening to you guys, maybe because of the area that you are living in now in Florida, you, Joy, are in Florida, am I right?
Yes, I'm in Florida, yes.
And then, Gladys, are you in Naples?
Yeah, I'm in Naples. My school is a small school. We have 230 students in high school. We have 30% of the population, or the student population, comes from Hispanic families. And the first language is Spanish. But mostly are American, but they like it. They have they are very willing to learn. Sometimes, they feel like they need more, so I have to make more activities to keep them engaged. But I think I'm getting better. I like to give all the best the students.
That's why I'm asking you, because I can tell that you guys have in some way a different task because maybe they are, you have a less percentage of students that come from the Hispanic background. In my case, 97%, just imagine, I mean, I will not go from that type of approach because basically they do, and actually I enjoy that. They do get involved in some way or another. And most of the time, since the students that I have are third generation Hispanic background, at least the abuelitos, the grandparents, or like one of my students likes to say, the G parents are always speaking to them in Spanish. So that helps me a lot. Maybe then my challenge is not merely about getting them involved, especially with the language, getting them involved with the study habits and skills that they need to have for any subject in the school. But it is really interesting to see how it is that circumstance is shaping the way that you are approaching teaching in the classroom. So I really sincerely would like to thank you, Joy and Gladys, for accepting to be here as a team hosting this podcast with me for our team project. I honestly hope that new teachers will find this information easy to use in their classrooms. So thank you very much, Joy and Gladys. Do you have any closing words? Go ahead, Joy, and then you can go ahead and do so too, Gladys.
Sure. First of all, I want to thank you both for being my partners in this class. And I feel like I learned a lot. You guys are really great to work with. And I hope this coming school year, we're going to have an excellent time in our classroom and really apply all the things that we'll be learning, all the cool stuff. Okay? Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Gladys.
Yes, I also want to thank you, both of you, because I have learned a lot from you guys and from our instructor, from all the peers in our online course. And I think I'm just going to leave this online course with a big bag of information, of techniques, strategies, all that I'm going to use on my next school year. Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And again, once more, we would like to thank also our facilitator, Dr. Kreider, for all that we have learned, as I said at the beginning, and for providing us with a significant spectrum of online learning experiences. Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, guys.